when I was in my early 20s, a doctor told me that I probably wasn't going to be able to have kids. I had struggled with endometriosis for some years, and to make a very long, boring story short, it did some damage and made things difficult. And I had two kind of real big problems that I was up against. The first one was even getting pregnant. They didn't think that I had enough of what you need to get pregnant, and then even if I could jump that hurdle, they didn't know that I could carry a baby to full term, that actually being able to stay pregnant was another big obstacle that we were up against. And I was very devastated when I heard this news, because really all I ever wanted was to be a mom, and I loved babies, and I just wanted more than anything to be a mom and have kids. So we prayed and we prayed and we prayed and we waited on God, and we came to the week of prayer that we do at church together, and our friends laid hands on us and prayed with us and pled with God for us. And 2 months after the week of prayer, I got pregnant. And week of prayer is awesome. We do it 2 times a year. It's an incredible time when God does amazing things. And when I finally got pregnant, like, I wish I could just show you like a video of how ecstatic we were. Like, everybody dropped everything. My family came over. My sisters were there. My parents were there. My husband came home from work. We were like jumping and dancing. And it was like better than Christmas morning. We were so excited. And my first pregnancy actually ended up being easier than I expected. And I went full term. I was even like 5 days overdue. They finally induced me to have the baby, and giving birth was a bit more of a disaster. Like, they talk about groaning, the groans of childbirth. Like, I groaned my daughter into this world, and there was like some hemorrhaging and some problems, but at the end of the day, our beautiful Isabella Rose was born, and this delightful, delicious, wonderful, beautiful little girl came into the world. And I got pregnant a second time, and my second pregnancy was a little trickier. That one, I did go into preterm labor, and I had to be on bed rest, which I am not the kind of person that can actually, it seems like a good idea, until you can't do anything for weeks and weeks. And I had a 2-year-old, and I couldn't, okay. So it was trickier, and then in the last part, she decided to do some somersaults and decided to be breech. So I ended up having to have a C-section, and I did not want to have a C-section. I did everything I could to get her to flip back around, but she wouldn't. And I remember my doctor telling me, he's like, you know, I find mothers with C-sections tend to heal a little bit faster because they're so focused on taking care of the baby. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Like, I've had surgery, and I've had children, and the two of these things combined, they don't sound easy, and it actually ended up being much easier than my first delivery was. And our second daughter was born, Savannah Eve, and she was this smiley little happy bundle of wonderfulness, and I held these beautiful girls in my arms and just couldn't help but thank God for them. And I rocked them at night when we were all sleep deprived and they wouldn't go to sleep. And I went up and down the halls and I did the jiggle to get them to go back to sleep. And we delighted in their laughter, and every new phase felt like so much fun. And my husband and I would be like, no, this is our favorite phase. And then like a whole new phase would happen, and they'd say their first words and they learned how to walk. And I put my youngest daughter on the bus to kindergarten this year. And I won't tell you how hard I ugly cried, because that's between me and my husband. But I just am still amazed that God lets me be their mom. Like, I feel so incredibly privileged that I get to know these girls and watch them grow, and all of the joy of seeing what's going to come next. And so when I read about the story and life of Abraham and Isaac in the Bible, I read it with a mother's heart. I read it with a heart that's waited and waited to be a mom, and felt the delight of holding my girls in my arm and the joy of watching them grow up. I find I can empathize with Abraham as he and Sarah waited and waited and waited to become parents. And I understand how hard it is to wait, right? Like, we rush out ahead of God and try to do things on our own, and we make a mess, and we find ourselves in these hard moments and trying to figure it all out. And even in all these ups and downs of their journey of faith, they still believed in the promises of God. So I love reading Genesis chapter 21, because it tells us the Lord visited Sarah as he had said. The Lord did to Sarah as he had promised, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son, who was born to him, who Sarah bore him, Isaac. Isaac means laughter. This wonderful promise that God had made brought laughter, the joy and laughter that only a baby can bring into a home, into the hearts and homes of Abraham and Sarah. They finally got to see God's promise come true after decades and decades of waiting. God promised Abraham that he would be the father of nations and that Sarah would be the mother of kings. And they weren't young when they made this promise. And they were well beyond this time of having kids. And still they believed in God. And even when they had no kids and it all seemed impossible, they believed that God would do what he said he would do. And I can just imagine their joy and their delight and their hearts as they welcomed this little guy into the world, and they held him on his chest, their chest, and prayed over him and loved over him and thanked God for him. And I wish that it could just end there. Like, I would be good. Like, call it a Sunday. I could go home and my heart would feel happy and I'd have like the goosebumps that make me feel good, right? Like, I'd have the tingling in my stomach and be like, yes, God did what he said he would do. I'm good. Like, yay, my heart would be good. But life is more than just feeling good. And faith is more than just these moments of happiness and delight, because there's a Genesis chapter 22. And in Genesis 22, we hear the hardness of challenge, because it says this: after these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, he said, here I am. God said to him, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I should tell you. No, I'm not going to lie. Like, I've struggled with these verses a lot. And it's hard to read, and we can't help but ask the question, like, how could God ask this of Abraham? And I feel the tension of, like, we know God, and he's loving and just and compassionate and kind and good, and he's God. How could he ask this of Abraham? The very one he's been making all these promises to, the one who's, like, believed in him and trusted him and followed him where he would go. But then I find myself even more puzzled in Abraham, because this is what Abraham does. Look at verse 3. Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. He cut the wood for the burnt offering, arose, and went to the place which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to the young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. He took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father, Abraham, my father, he said, here I am, son. He said, behold, the fire, the wood is here, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went both of them together. Abraham went. Like, it's so hard to contemplate, just as Abraham followed God when he called him away from his home of Ur and he went to this new land that he told him he would go. He followed God up to Moriah. He packed his bags and set off on his way. And it was a 3-day journey. It didn't happen overnight. It was a 3-day journey, which must have been the longest days of his life. But he went where God told him to go. And then I can't help but ask, like, how could Abraham do this? How could Abraham carry this weight and the anguish in his heart? And what in the world gave him the strength to climb that mountain? Like, what in the world, how did he take even one step in the direction that would lead to the end of his son's life? And being Abraham, he went all of the way through. Look at verse 9. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. And it's hard to read. Like, Abraham didn't stop. He didn't hesitate. He went all the way through where God called him to go. But God meets Abraham right here in this moment at Moriah. The angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham. And he said, here I am. God said to him, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. Abraham went and took the ram, offered it up as a burnt sacrifice instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to the day, "On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." God met Abraham right here in Moriah. And he provided the ram for the sacrifice, and Abraham called this place, "The Lord will provide." And it's interesting because the more literal Hebrew translation here is Yahweh Yireh, "The Lord will see to it." Now, I can't remember how many years ago I was reading this passage in the Bible, and I was struggling with it, as I do every single time. Like, I want to just move ahead. Like, let's talk about Moses and the parting of the Red Sea, right? Like, I want to talk about some adventures and not struggle with this hard moment. But God opened my eyes to something that I hadn't seen before when I was reading it. See, we only can guess at what's going on in the mind of heart of Abraham. Like, he's pretty much silent this whole time. He doesn't say a whole lot. And in fact, Isaac is the one who breaks the silence when he says, like, "Hey, Dad, like, I see you packed the wood. I see you packed the thing to start the fire, but I don't see anything to sacrifice." You know, kids ask hard questions and we're like, "Oh, right, good question." And Abraham's response actually shows us a glimpse of his heart. Because he says to Isaac, "God will provide." And I don't think he was lying here. I don't think he was being facetious and trying to, like, you know, push away a hard question that he wasn't prepared to answer. I think Abraham really believed in God. And he so believed in the promises of God that he was able to make this impossible journey doing an impossible thing because he believed in all of it. God was going to provide. And something about that sentence changed everything for me. It helped me look at this all differently because Abraham's eyes were so focused on God, what God could do and what God had promised he would do, that he was able to move forward in faith. And even further than that, when Abraham leaves those two guys that they brought behind with them as they make the last part of their journey, look at what he says to these two guys. He says, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." He said, "We're going to go up there and we are going to come back." Abraham knew God, and he'd been building this relationship. God had been building this relationship with him for decades. And Abraham believed God could do impossible things by making him a father. And he saw that God could do these impossible things and keep his promises, and he kept following God. And in faith, Abraham was able to move forward. And here's how we see the evidence of his faith in this moment. He packed the donkey, right? He got the wood and the fire, and he packed up Isaac, and he went exactly where God told him to go, and he believed that he and Isaac were going to come back from the mountain. He believed that God was going to provide. This is what Charles Swindoll says about it. He says, "Even though Abraham didn't understand the situation, he knew the righteous character of God, and he believed the promise that he had made." He said the statement that Abraham makes to Isaac that God will provide, it reflected Abraham's utter confidence that God would do what was right. And you know, what's interesting is if you read Hebrews, the author of Hebrews talks about all of these men and women of faith and all of these hard things that they do. And he actually pushes this whole idea even one step further. It says, "By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promise was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, 'Through Isaac shall your offspring be named.' He considered that God was able even to raise him back from the dead, which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back." Abraham went on this impossible journey. He was called to do this impossible thing, fully believing that he was bringing Isaac back down with him, even if God had to do one more impossible thing. Abraham expected the impossible of God because he'd already seen God do impossible things. Abraham loved God. I mean, we talk about him 4,000 years later as a father of faith because we see how he moved each step forward in faith with God and followed him and went on this journey with him. And his belief in God's promises that God would bring him a son and that the son's name would be Isaac and the son would be through Sarah and that God was going to establish this promise with Isaac just like he did with Abraham and all of the descendants after them. Abraham loved Isaac. He was a dad. He loved his kid that brought joy and laughter into his home. And he believed that this was the son God had promised him, that he and his wife had waited and waited and waited for. I mean, we just can't lose sight of this was not an easy thing that Abraham was called to do. It wasn't an easy journey. It wasn't an easy choice. It was not a decision that lacked in any way emotion. Because a father who loves his son can't look at this thing lightly. They can't move forward without dread. But Abraham still moved forward. There's one more thing I want you to see that Charles Swindoll said. He said, God doesn't put people to a test to see how well their faith responds under fire. He prepares these tests of faith to show us what he has made of us lately. Whether we pass or fail, we learn about ourselves. We learn where we need improvement, or we discover how spiritually mature we have become. He said, the Lord saw to Abraham's test and saw to supplying everything he needed, because the Lord will forever see to it. He says, never forget that name. When you come to a situation that appears impossible, name it Yahweh your way. The Lord will see to this. Now, we think of tests like the one we took at school, right? Like you pass the test or you fail the test or you get a good grade or you get a bad grade. And we think about like all of the grades coming together and do you pass the level that you're in or do you get held back? And hopefully the good grades weigh out the bad grades and it all balances out in the end. But that's not how our relationship to God works, because God is growing us to be men and women of faith. And this isn't a pass or fail system. This is life. This is our life, and our faith grows and develops right in the middle of the tension and the chaos. Our faith is cultivated right in the middle of hard decisions and painful circumstances and long journeys that we don't understand. That's where our faith is grown. But just as God was with Abraham on the top of the mountain at Moriah, he meets us in the very hardest moments of life. He meets us and shows us a way out. Just as God was calling Abraham to be a man of faith and follow him and to move forward in faith with him, God's calling us to be men and women of faith who will take a step forward with him. But to move forward with God, to move forward in faith, there's three things that I want us to see today. The first one is this. God is going to ask us to let things go. Now, we like to cling to things. Like, we hold on as tight as we can, and we can't let go. But if we're ever going to have any kind of faith in God, we have to learn how to let things go. Now, in some parts of my life, this is easy. I don't have to think about it. I don't bat an eyelash at it. I'm like, put it in the garbage. It's done. I'm over it. We don't need it. But in other aspects of my life, I'm like, from my dead prying grip, can you pry that from me, right? My husband was trying to help one time, and I came home, and he's like, we cleaned out the playroom, and we organized all of the kids' toys. And I'm like, oh. And the toy box, I'm not kidding, it was empty. It was empty down to the bottom. And I started going through the boxes, and I'm like, you can't get rid of the American Girl doll stuff. Do you know how expensive that is? Like, we've got money invested there. And it was like all of these special things. Like, that was their first stuffed animal. Do you know how much meaning is in that? It didn't end well. But there are some things that we cling to, and it makes this all so, so hard. Look, God's not going to ask us to sacrifice our child. But he is going to call us to raise our kids in the kind of way that we let them go. That we raise them to be adults who can function on their own apart from us. God's not going to ask us to sacrifice our child, but he is going to call us to raise our kids to go on their own adventures of faith that are risky and scary and hard, and we're fully dependent on God seeing them through. That we raise our kids to be adults who can make their own decisions and live their own lives. And part of faith is saying, I know God. I know who he is and what he's promised. And in my heart, I believe God loves my kids more than I do. I've had to learn this in hard moments because I've been in the hospital with my kids and there was respiratory distress and breathing wasn't working right and I was pleading with God. And the only reason I survived that with any degree of sanity was the utter belief God loves my kids more than I do and I can trust my kids with him because he's God. He is the very one who holds all things in orbit. He's the very one who has been in control of history and life and the universe with which we live from the beginning of time until the end. I can trust God to keep things going. I can trust God to hold things as they should be. We cling to stuff. We cling to these things in our life saying we have to have them to be happy and these are the things that I need because I can't do life without them. And life is forever teaching us that it's more than stuff. It's more than what we can acquire in a lifetime because it's fleeting and it goes quicker than we know. It's more than just things, and it's more than just our house or our paycheck or our job or the things that we've accumulated in the bigger and the better and the car. God is going to ask us to let things go, to stop letting these things, these material things, define who we are or the measure of our life. Because God's going to call us to let our life be defined by who we are in Jesus Christ. Because we've always been designed to be called and defined by him, not the things that we own or the things that we acquire. God's going to ask us to let go of the control. We cling to control, right? Like we want control and things have to be a certain way and we want the final say and we want to be in charge of it and we want to do the things that the way they're supposed to be done, right? Like if the world would just listen to me, everything would be great and there wouldn't be all of these problems. But here's the problem. Nobody listens, right? Like obviously you have kids, you know, they don't always listen and things don't always go the way that you think they should be. Or let's just be honest, we're wrong sometimes. I think it should be a certain way, but I am so not right. We have to let go of trying to control everything. Because here's what's happened. It was never our job. It was never, you can't read anywhere in the Bible where God says, I want you to do everything by yourself. I want you to just load up your shoulders as heavy as you can. Just do everything that you can all by yourself. Forget about faith. Forget about trust. Forget about doing life with others. I just want you to burden yourself and go do life. Like, God didn't say that. He never called us to do that. In fact, just the opposite. He said, lay your burdens down at my feet and let me help you carry the load for a while. It's just too heavy to bear on your own. And look, we know the result of what happens. We've tried doing this on our own and we have worn ourselves down. We have burnt ourselves out trying to carry it by ourselves. And it's never who God said we're supposed to be. You know what? God even said we could take a day off. From the very beginning, he created the calendar, said, you know what? You take a day off, call it a Sabbath, and just trust that things are going to keep going without you. Just trust me to be in control and see what's going to happen. If we don't stop clinging to the control of things, we never get to see what God can do. We're so busy saying to God, I can do this. Let me do this. I've got it figured out. Just let me be, that we don't ever get to see what would happen when we let God be and do what only he can do. If we don't stop trying to control everything, we don't ever get to see the mighty works of God because we're too busy trying to hold on to it all ourselves. And look, God can always do more than we even know how to ask. God can always do better than I ever could have done on my own. And instead of burning myself out, instead of making ourselves sick with the anxiety and the worry of trying to do it all on our own, God says, let me help. And we get to give control to him and see what happens when an awesome God shows up and does what only he can do. We cling to relationships. Like, who would I be without this person? And I can't ever let them go. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have them. And we cling to unhealthy behaviors, right? Like, I need this to be happy. I need this to, like, help me get through the stress of the day, or the things we think will make all the unpleasantness and the hardness go away. We cling to all of these different things. But there is going to come a moment in our life when God calls us to take a journey up the mountain of Moriah and let things go. And if we're ever going to move forward in faith, if we're ever going to have the incredible relationship that God has designed us for, we have to learn how to let things go. Because when we do, we get to be wholly reliant on God. We get to have a moment where we are so reliant on the strength of God seeing us through that we build faith in a way we never could have done otherwise. But sacrifice is very personal. It's something only each one of us can do individually. It's never something that anybody can do for you. But at the same time, there is no such thing as greatness without sacrifice. You can't study any life, any athlete who's gotten to the top of their career, or any person who started a business with any level of success, or a family that's functioning in even the remotestness of healthy, and not find stories of sacrifice. You know, we're willing to give things up to be healthy, or we're willing to give things up to be more fit, or we're willing to give things up, you know, to have children. But nobody lives the very best version of their lives without confronting the reality of their life and saying, what do I need to let go of? What do I need to let loose in my life so I can clear the clutter and the junk out of my heart and create space to fill the God-sized hole that only He can fill in my heart? We all have to ask ourselves this question. We all have to work our way through what are the right things that I need to sacrifice so that I can be the man or woman God's calling me to be. What are the things I need to stop clinging to so I can see what happens when God shows up and my heart's open to Him? And here's what we will find. When we open up our hands, instead of keeping them tight and fisted, but we open up our hands and our hearts, when we let go, we get to see God is going to do more than we could ever imagine. God is going to grow in us more faith and hope and courage and strength than we could ever do on our own. But do we believe that God will see to it? Do we believe that the Lord will provide when we are willing to let things go? God's also going to ask us to trust Him in incredibly hard things. Abraham trusted God in the hardest moments of his life. He got to see God work in incredible ways, all because he said yes to God. And his first yes was followed by a series of more yeses. And each step he took was another yes to God, to seeing Him work. But Abraham's life was not easy. It was not without challenge. He was incredibly blessed, but it wasn't easy. Abraham believed God, but his life didn't suddenly become perfect. His life didn't suddenly make sense, and he never had to face any hard times again. It was challenging, and it took time, and he stumbled along the way, but he kept moving forward with God. Faith isn't easy. Faith isn't without challenge and waiting on God. And we know we don't like waiting. We want things to go from here to there as they should, without problem and without any struggle or any hardship. But it's not how life works. And even bigger the problem is, we forget that we've only got our perspective right now. My life, my perspective, my history, and even when we try to study beyond that, we can't see what God can see, because God has the eternal view of time and history. Everything that has been and will be fits into the plan of God and what He's doing in this world. And our trust is in more than just what we've got our grasp on in this time. It's what God's got a grasp on for all of time in all of history. And the same God who did an incredible work in the life of Abraham, who showed up and did the impossible things again and again and again. Friends, he has a plan, and we're part of it. And he's the same God calling us to follow him. He's the same God who's calling us to a relationship of faith with him, who is at work today. When things get hard, when we don't understand or we're in pain and we want to fix things and we want to get rid of the uncomfortableness and the tension and the stress and make things easier, we can't ever forget that we are waiting on an awesome God to move, and he's got it. He's willing to provide, and he's willing to see us through. We can't ever forget life isn't easy, not for any of us. Bad happens to good people and bad people alike. And when life is hard and seems incredibly unfair and overwhelming and we don't understand it, do we trust God then? Because when life is easy, it's easy to trust God. When everything's as it should be, faith isn't hard. It's easy to trust God in the summer when the sun is shining and the birds are singing and the sky is blue and anything seems possible. It's hard to trust God in the depths of a dreary winter when we haven't seen the sun in months. It is hard to trust God when it's dark and it's hard and we can't see a crack of light. It is hard to move forward in faith when we are overwhelmed by the despairs of life. But it is in those moments God is as near to us as he has been at any other time. He promises that he is near to the brokenhearted and the crushed in spirit. He's with us when we face challenges, and he's with us when we're trying to work our way through the mess of our families or our jobs or our relationships. But will we trust him to see us through? Because this is the courage of faith. The courage of faith is trusting God when things get hard. It's trusting God when the clouds cover the sun and we can't see. Trusting that God still answers prayers, that God still keeps his promises, believing that he is in control even when it's hard. But I promise you, the greatest adventure of your life lies on the other side of that fear you feel in the dark. The greatest life that you are called to live, it's on the other side of our comfort zones, and it requires risk and faith and courage and prayer. But that is the very person God is calling you to be, even in the midst of the hard things. And here's the last thing that I want us to see. God is going to ask us to put him first. Like, if we're ever going to be the men and women God's called us to be, or the church that God's created to be, then he has to come first in all parts of our life, in everything that we do. Because when we put God first, when we love him with the very, very best of ourselves, not the leftovers, not all we have left at the end of a long, exhausting week, but the very best of ourselves, we are better at everything else. We are better spouses when God comes first. We're better parents when God comes first. We're better at our jobs. We're better leaders when God comes first. Because on our own, look, I'm lacking. And I might have what it takes for like a minute, maybe two on a good day, but I cannot carry it on my own for a lifetime. I cannot sustain it all on my own, but we weren't created to. We were never meant to. And look, life has a way of obscuring our vision. Life has a way of cluttering our view, and we lose sight of God in the clutter and the chaos and the mess and the tension that life builds around us. But when we see God for who he is, when we put him first in all that we do, we live the very best versions of our life that we were ever meant to live. Abraham was a better man because God came first. Abraham is considered a father of faith because he continually put God first in all that he did. And the better we get at giving God all of ourselves, all that we are to him, the more he's able to do his incredible work in us. The better we are at opening up our hands and opening up our hearts to him, the more we get to see what it looks like when a mighty God is at work. Soren Kierkegaard wrote this incredible book called Fear and Trembling, and he wrestles his way through the tension and the paradox that happens in Abraham in this moment of his life with Isaac. And he does this incredible comparison and what it looks like to be a man of faith. But listen to what he says. He says, "No one shall be forgotten who is great in the world. Each was great in his own way, and each in proportion to the greatness of that which he loved. For he who moved himself became great by himself. He who loved other men became great by his selfless devotion, but he who loved God became greater than all." He said, "One became great by expecting the possible, another by expecting the eternal, but he who expected the impossible became greater than all." He said, "For he who strove with the world became great by overcoming the world. He who strove with himself became great by overcoming himself, but he who strove with God became greater than all." The very best lives we are called to live happen when God comes first, because that is the greatest life we will ever live. And this is the life of faith that God is calling us to. But there's one more thing that I want to say that we cannot study this idea and move past. We feel tension when we read about hard things like this. It's hard, and we don't have to say it's not. It's hard to understand. And we're on one hand amazed at what God does and how awesome he is, but there's that part of us that's saying, "God, please don't ask something so hard of me." Right? There's part of us that's saying, "God, please don't challenge me in this way. I don't think I have what it takes to do what Abraham did." And we feel this tension saying, like, what is it going to cost us to follow God? And what is God going to ask if we say yes to him? Right? We've worked our way or thought these hard questions before. But I want to flip the question around, because I think the harder question to ask is, what did it cost God for us to follow him? What did it cost Christ for us to have faith? Because here's what the letter to the Romans tells us. "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he also with him not give us all things?" For us to follow God, it cost him his only son. For us to have any measure of faith, it cost Jesus Christ everything when he willingly gave up his life for us. The hardest work that's ever had to be done, the highest price that's ever had to be paid, the greatest sacrifice that's ever been made was already done when Christ went to the cross and willingly gave up his life for us, so that you and I might know him, so that you and I might call on his name and be saved. There's nothing we could ever give up, no sacrifice we could ever make that could ever compare with the sacrifice that's already been made in our behalf when Christ died for us. And if we're ever wondering, does God even care? Does God even know what's happening or worry about what's going on? Does God really love any of us? All we have to do is look to the cross, where we see the full character of God revealed, just how much he loves us. Friends, God loves us so much, he did not spare his own son. The greatest act that ever had to be done, Christ already did on our behalf. We move forward in faith because our faith rests wholly in Jesus Christ and what he's done for us. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would please be at work on our hearts today. Father, as we wrestle our way through hard ideas and challenging thoughts, I pray that you would please pour out your grace upon us. I pray, Father, that you would open us up to seeing you in ways we've never seen you before. I pray, Father, that you would give us the courage to open up our hands and let things go, that we would learn how to trust you in the hardest moments of our life, and that you would just clear out our vision, Father, that we could see you, believe in your promises, and put you first in all that we do. Father, I recognize that you did so much when you gave us Jesus Christ. I recognize I don't deserve it. I'm not good enough for it. But Father, I am eternally grateful that you saw fit to wade into our mess and show us the way out. Father, give us the courage to believe that you will see to it, that you will provide. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.